I would trade him if I could.
I don't think many people liked it, to be honest. I don't care.
Last year didn't really do well for anybody.
We should probably delete all of this.
By the laws of the podcast gods, we owe an answer.
Reporting the Highline with Rabbi in Red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car or in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the Highline.
Hello, Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves and are a part of the Beautiful Game Network. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, March 24th, 2021. We are 31 years to the day since the meeting of the Breakfast Club canonically. And we're recording this just after the full-time whistle of the third group stage game for the United States U23 team down in Guadalajara, in which they lost 1-0 to Mexico and thus finished second and advanced to the semifinal of the tournament, which will be played on Sunday. They'll be playing either Canada or Honduras, I believe, and if they win that, they'll be through to the Olympics. But first of all, Rabbi Mark Goodman, we need to address 10 people passed away in Boulder, Colorado at a King Supers from a mass shooting that took place 2 days ago now. One of those 10 people being Boulder police officer Eric Talley. And I think, unfortunately, Mark, I'm going to start off with a bit of a dark humor joke. NPR was doing a report that robocalls and spam calls are up in the last week. So I guess we're rounding the corner and returning to normalcy because spam calls are back and mass shootings are back in the United States of America.
Ugh, so bad. I mean, you know, we're not a current events podcast and we're not a politics podcast, so we're a Colorado podcast, so, this is mostly about feeling sad and miserable. I think it's also for Coloradans an opportunity to kind of think about, and really for all Americans, because if you're a Rapids fan and you live anywhere in the domestic United States, you live in a place where shootings are far more prevalent and common than they should be. You know, I write this as a Jewish guy who lives in Pittsburgh, so clearly my experiences of, you know, mass shootings are pretty on the surface and visceral and raw. Whenever a shooting happens, another community that's experienced a shooting feels a sudden two feelings at once. Like one thing we often feel, and I will say we, and I think I can speak in both directions as a Jewish person in Pittsburgh or as a Pittsburgher, but also as a Coloradan, because I was a high school teacher the day there was a lockdown at my school for the Arapaho High School shooting, and I was the administrator responsible for contacting teachers and issuing the lockdown and, you know, making sure that security had things under control. Like, that's scary, you know? It's scary if you grew up in Colorado and you have visceral memories of Columbine. It's scary if you remember the Aurora, movie theater shooting, you know? Like, these are all triggering, traumatic events that make your heart go out to individuals who are directly affected. But I think if you are also like, I don't think anybody feels nothing around this. I think people should feel a small amount of trauma. They may say that like, oh, you know, like it's terrible what happened, or, you know, it's really, you know, it makes me angry or it makes me frustrated or whatever. But like deep behind there, there's either a small feeling of trauma where you are mentally saying to yourself that you have to suppress the urge to panic or suppress the anxiety that comes with being in public places. Like, I'm sure everybody in Colorado in the last week had to go to the supermarket, and everybody got out of their car in the parking lot, and especially if you are like me as a Coloradan who went to King Supers, the one of the two or three in Denver that I went to. And you get out of the car in the parking lot and you see the big red sign and over the store, and, you know, your brain just immediately goes, is this the last time I'm ever going to talk to my family because I needed to get milk. You know, that's a real thing. It's we need to address it. You need to be able to say, like, this is a thing that I'm feeling and it sucks. And I also think, like, the reaction to all of this stuff should be, action. I think throwing up your hands and saying, well, what are you going to do? You know, cars are going to kill people, right? Like, inventing the seatbelt, that's too much difficulty, right? Like, those are not acceptable responses. You don't have to be a hardcore, you know, repeal the Second Amendment or a hardcore, you know, NRA supporter to understand that what is going on in America is not normal, it is not healthy, it is not right, and some steps need to be taken to mitigate the next disaster from happening, or at least to, you know, make the number of affected individuals be fewer. Matt, any thoughts?
I mean, I'm continuously at a loss of words for this, Mark. You know, you possibly, as a rabbi, are better at talking about these kind of emotional things, but, you know, this is the thing that has become normal. And, you know, there's a few things that inherently get ticked up anytime there's a major mass shooting, you know, in terms of social media. One is the, Jim Jeffries, comedy, his special, his rant about, you know, F off, I like guns. That's the main punchline from that little bit. There's the Onion article that says, you know, there's no way to prevent this, says the only country where this happens. And then one that's become more recently that I don't know how I forgot about it, but it was originally a tweet from 2015, and I'm sure people copy and post, and I don't know who the original poster of was this, but basically said, Sandy Hook was the final boss of this battle. Once we decided that kindergartners getting slaughtered in cold blood was acceptable and didn't, you know, require immediate and sweeping action, at that point, the good guys, if you're saying people who are against gun violence are the good guys, you know, they ultimately lost. And, you know, I say this as, you know, someone who I grew up in. I was 9 years old when Columbine happened. I was a senior in high school when the Virginia Tech mass shooting happened. You know, I am the generation of school drills are now, you know, locked down. There's an active shooter. Something is normal place. And I have friends now who are my age who have kids going to kindergarten, in first grade, in second grade, potentially, where they regularly have nightmares about school shootings. Because obviously, you know, these have happened regularly in public places, Mark. But I think the Sandy Hook, I think, was the trigger to where the first time of, okay, this can happen at an elementary school. So even, you know, your kindergarten class, or, you know, Mark, your, you know, second and fourth grader, they're potentially not safe because of where we're at. And the reality is, one of these is going to happen probably in a couple of months somewhere in the United States, and we're going to have this exact same conversation, and things are going to get gummed up because of the way things are in our politics. And I don't really have anything to add, Mark, other than I say this as a former PhD student. I say this as one of my really good friends who's an economist, has a really good rant basically arguing engineers, economists, and data scientists are the most objective people that you actually have. We are data and evidence and proof first and anything. We don't have emotional connections to anything, and ultimately we want to see evidence-based results. And so the simple thing that I'll point out, Mark, is, you know, there are statutes and laws such that the CDC cannot use government funding to do research on gun violence in America, either, you know, individuals in the case of gun suicide, gun violence of homicide, mass shootings, or anything like that. And the reason that those laws are in place are largely because of one political party. Listeners, I'll let you guess which one of those is against it. And one of the things that they might be scared of is that an independent, completely data-oriented, you know, data scientists of, you know, let's look at this and bring a bunch of experts. What does the data say? What analysis can we glean from? And then what conclusions are completely objective based on that? And that party is, I think, largely scared of the possibility that they come back and say people having lots of guns leads to lots of gun deaths. And I think there is a gray area where we could have an intelligent and articulate discussion that exists between the mediums of abolish the Second Amendment and give everybody a gun and let's go full Switzerland, and then everybody who's not a potential violent criminal is a good guy with a gun at that King Supers, teachers at that high school, et cetera, et cetera. There's a space between, you know, those are two extremes, and there's a bunch of stuff in the middle where I think we can have a conversation. And we're not going to have that we're going to have that conversation. It's not going to lead to any action because of where we're at. And I think one thing that for me, again, as a scientific-based former PhD student, would want to see an independent, government-funded, comprehensive review of that. And we don't have that data that says, you know, maybe it's universal background checks, or maybe it's having a national gun registry, or maybe it's, you know, some other change. Other than that, we can't have that conversation because of one political party says that we don't want to have any movement on that. And it's largely the political party that if anything gets brought up in the Senate, that, you know, it would ultimately be stopped. So I don't have anything else to say, I guess, other than, Mark, I would say, listeners, pause this podcast right now and call, text, or message somebody you love, that you care about, because the last 13 months have been filled with a lot of death, and ultimately you never know when that is going to strike somebody. Let's move on, Mark. We got a news dump from Major League Soccer earlier today as we officially got the full 34-game schedule here, including the entire 34-game schedule for the Colorado Rapids, not just their first two games being April 17th, that Saturday at FC Dallas open season, or their season opener against Austin FC that will be on April the 24th, Mark. So it's a full comprehensive schedule. Do you want to run through it, Mark? I have a couple notes that I thought were newsworthy, but I'll let you talk since I was talking.
No, you start with the notes.
So one thing I'll say, first of all, Mark, we have decision day is officially on November the 7th. So if we think about usually in the before times of COVID, decision day usually took place that first Saturday or that first full week into October. I believe it was either somewhere between October 6th and October 8th, 2 years ago, Tim Howard's final game with the Colorado Rapids that was decision day 2019 at LAFC. The Colorado Rapids, coincidentally, will be playing at home against Bob Bradley's side on decision day this year, Mark. But we think about it, you know, the season usually kicks off that last weekend in February, that first weekend in March. This week will be about 2 weeks halfway through April. So we think, you know, somewhere between 6 and 7 weeks later is when the season is actually starting. But then the season's extended a month because we're into the first full week of November, as opposed to the first full week of October. You account for the fact that Champions League has been moved and truncated to account for that for the United States, for Mexico, and the other leagues involved in those competitions. You account for the fact that only one-third of MLS teams will be participating in the Open Cup, and we are going to have large breaks. There's a pretty substantial break for the group stage of the Gold Cup, as well as a couple international windows as well. Mark, it's actually not that bad in terms of a schedule. So the thing that I'm pointing out here, Mark, that I went through and I did a whole calendar math that I'd be happy to tweet out if anybody's interested. there are 5 or 6 weeks in which I would say what we refer to as rough weeks in Major League Soccer, of not just DGWs, but 3 games in 8 days. So for example, in July, they play a game on the 17th, the 21st, and the 24th of that month. That will be a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. In August, they have a Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday from the 14th to the 21st. In September, they have a Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, October 11th, 15th, and the 19th. And then they have a week off between their next game on the 25th, and then they have another Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday. And then they have a really rough patch here, Mark, in October from the 16th through Halloween, in which they play Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday. And those games are at RSL, home against the Cascadia teams, Seattle, then Portland, then at New England Revolution, and then they have a Halloween matinee game, 1:30 Denver time, at Houston, which is going to be really rough if you think about how early their charter flight is going to have to be if MLS teams are still traveling there and back again for away games. Then they have a full week off, and then the home game against LAFC. They only have 2 games in the month of June, Mark, on the 19th to the 23rd, so they'll go from May 29th to June 19th without a game, and then the 23rd through the traditional July 4th game, which we played on Sunday, July 4th, Mark, against the Seattle Sounders. But then, as I said before, they've got rough schedules with 6 games total in the months of August, September, and October. So it's weird in that when we think about, Mark, where we are in August, we think we're roughly halfway through the season. In reality, we won't be there. You know, over half of the Colorado Rapids games will take place in the month of July, August, and September. You compare that, they're playing just 7 games between August and May. So it's a backloaded schedule. in terms of the calendar, in terms of how many games we actually take place. And then hopefully by that point, players are fit. They've had a bunch of weeks where they've only had one game a week to account for. They get into the run of it. We'll be past most of the summer tournaments. The Gold Cup will be over by the time we get to September. The Olympics will be over by the time we get to September. And then it kind of gets into a run-in like it was last season, Mark, you know, where September and October were loaded with games. Pretty much, you know, there were games Wednesday and Thursday every single week on the MLS fixture schedule, jam-packed Saturdays and Sundays. You know, I just really hope that, you know, no team has an outbreak of COVID in September or October, because other than that Wednesday before to Sunday, there's literally no wiggle room in the calendar schedule. I've kind of broken down the lineup, Mark. Any key fixtures that you're looking at or that you care about, or any other observations?
I mean, it's early to start and talk about key fixtures because we don't really know who's good yet. I think it's, you know, there's a couple notable things. I mean, one is, the early fixture against LAFC is going to be an important one. The Rapids always play really tight against Minnesota. We play them several times at the early end of the season. So that's kind of notable. It's, of course, going to be important in the West to see how good the LA Galaxy are. Another notable thing I think is worth mentioning is that we play Vancouver a bunch this year, and according to reports, Vancouver is going to be living at RSL this year because Canadian teams still can't travel to the United States, so all of the three Canadian teams are planning on setting up shop domestically here in the United States, which begs the question for me, does that make Vancouver kind of like a mini RSL rival? Should we feel like kind of an anti-rivalry with them? And then I have one other question to throw to you after that, but I'll let you answer the how should I feel about Vancouver, or and additionally, Matt, are there any of the teams that I called out here that give you pause, that make you think they're notable?
One thing that I will say, so I'll answer the question in the reverse order in which they were asked, Mark. I don't see any, other than that stretch just where they have just so much fixture congestion with effectively back-to-back three games in 8 days, and effectively that stretch that I was mentioning earlier, folks, in October from the 16th to Halloween the 31st, they'll play 5 games over 16 days. Three of which will be on the road. That's going to be really, really tough. I don't see a big run-in, Mark, in terms of, you know, 4 or 5 games where I'm seeing teams that are definitively going to be really good to where I say, you know, that's going to make or break the season. In the way, Mark, that I would have referred to, apologies for a Premier League pivot here, folks, but a couple weeks ago, the Rapids, Fulham had 3 games in 8 days where they played Tottenham, Liverpool, and then Manchester City. And then if you look at them running in against Newcastle, Newcastle has an absolute murderer's row in terms of games every 4 days against teams in the top six as well. I'm not seeing, Mark, an LAFC, a road game at Columbus Crew, Seattle, Atlanta. I'm not seeing a significant, from a quality of the opponent standpoint, a 4 or 5 game stretch that I see is particularly bad or particularly good. So I guess when you look at that, that's pretty balanced in terms of, you know, the Rapids aren't going to have 3 or 4 games in a row where we say, oh, they're playing Houston, they're playing Cincinnati, they're playing, you know, let's say, well, I'll throw in Inter Miami because I think they're a mess given their circumstances. You know, they don't have a murderer's row for 2 or 3 weeks at any given point given the quality of the opponent. They don't have a cupcake schedule in terms of 2 or 3 weeks in a row in which they're playing teams that you'd expect the Rapids to pick up 10 points out of 12. For example, in terms of individual opponents, Mark, I guess we didn't mention this. There will be 3 Rocky Mountain Cup games to play. The Rapids will start at RSL on July the 24th. That will be on the back end of a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. They'll have the first game here at DSG a month later on August the 21st. That'll be on the back end of a Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday for the Rapids. And then the final Rocky Mountain Cup game that I would assume, Mark, given it's an unbalanced schedule, won't actually count for the Rocky Mountain Cup, will be that away game on October the 16th to start that 5-game in 16-day stretch for the Colorado Rapids. So from a Rocky Mountain Cup, defending the Rocky Mountain Cup, which Mark rightfully is colored burgundy and blue at the moment, July 24th for the away game, and then the 21st back here in Commerce City of August will be the two games to focus in there. I guess the other thing that we haven't talked about from a calendar standpoint, Mark, remember, the Open Cup is going to be determined based on the first three games of the regular season. We now know who that third opponent for the Rapids will be. As we mentioned previously, they'll start off at FC Dallas on Saturday, April 17th. They'll be home to Austin FC. And then that third opponent, Mark, will be the aforementioned Vancouver Whitecaps. I guess the Vancouver Sasquatch Whitecaps. They'll be playing them on May the 2nd, which I believe is also a Saturday. So should Rapids fans inherently have more ill will and bad feelings about the Caps given that they're taking up residency in Salt Lake City? I would say no, Mark. I guess my question there is, what are the local jurisdictions such that fans can or can't come back to Rio Tinto Stadium? Does Vancouver want to pursue that? Is there any portion of those gate receipts that Vancouver gets for what are technically their home games that they owe to RSL? Like, are they renting out Rio Tinto Stadium? I think is an interesting question. And given, Mark, that there aren't going to be a whole lot of people from Vancouver who are going to be able to travel internationally to that game, maybe there'll be a couple Vancouver expats who will fly in from other parts around the country, Mark. Does that effectively become a, hey, we need to get some form of revenue, let's have fans against the not RSL teams just so we can have people in the building, to the point where you have RSL fans buying tickets to a Vancouver Whitecaps home game to root against the Colorado Rapids? Or do all of those tickets get bought up by Pitts fans who potentially might have an easier time getting tickets given the jurisdiction differences and the potential political leanings of Salt Lake City and the greater state of Utah relative to DSG given its capacity, which likely, if they do open up where they were at a similar level they were thinking last year, they'll be opening up to where probably season ticket holders will sell out the minimum capacity as well. One more thing on that, Mark. I think this is a fascinating test case in terms of a team becoming an altitude team. And what does Vancouver do from a sports science standpoint or their own training to potentially take advantage of being an altitude team for at least the first section of the season as a team that normally didn't really have to think about that? I think would be a fascinating question for Mark Dos Santos or any of the sports science athletic training staff that he has on staff there with Vancouver. Mark, those were a lot of words. Your thoughts?
I was going to say, and if you're really interested in this conversation, tune in to our other podcast. Hey, man, what's going on with the Vancouver Whitecaps? No, we don't have another podcast. We have enough time. Actually, Matt actually does, but I don't. My other podcast would likely be something about rabbinic thought in the 18th and 19th century as it corresponds with Eastern European trends in potato diets. No, the only other thing I was going to add, and this is for me the big shock in this reveal of the schedule for the entire league today, was that the league decided to go with a vastly unbalanced schedule, but not a completely unbalanced schedule, which is the Rapids are playing 34 games just like they would in a full year, like 2 years ago, back in the good old days of 2019, when we didn't have a pandemic. And 31 games are against Western Conference opponents, and 3 are against Eastern Conference opponents. The 3 Eastern Conference opponents the Rapids will be playing this year are, I have to go back and look at it because I barely remember it,
FC, FC Cincinnati, and are they playing Nashville?
No, they're not playing Nashville.
That would have been wonderful.
The Rebs are the four.
New England, yes.
Which, okay, so back to the personal thing. On a personal level, that totally sucks. None of those games are drivable for me. The closest one is Cincinnati, which is 4.5 hours drive, and the flight is not doable because you can't fly direct from Pittsburgh to Cincinnati no matter what, unless you own your own plane. And I don't have plans to get my pilot's license between now and early June. So that means that, like, the easiest way, literally, Matt, for me to see the Rapids live is to get on a plane and fly to Colorado. So that's my my personal complaint. So, hey, Matt, warm up the couch. I'll probably be there in July at some point. you know, I hope you have spare blankets and kosher food.
You don't want to fly into, Hartford or Providence and then interview Bruce after the game at Gillette?
I mean, Hartford's not that close to Boston. It's, you'd have to drive down from there. But do I want to wait till October when it's probably a major Jewish holiday and then go to see the worst stadium in Major League Soccer? No. My question that I'll throw to you at the end of this, Matt, is really, why? I mean, I think at first when I saw it, I went, oh, okay, the league is trying to save money on travel. And then immediately I went, no, they're not. That doesn't make any sense because there weren't too many teams in Major League Soccer that you could, that could drive to each other anyways. You know, the teams that in MLS that can, you can load up the guys and throw them on a bus without them, you know, basically violating the MLSPA contract of, you know, how miserable a travel experience it could be, are New York to Philly,
the New Yorks to each other, the LAs to each other,
Boston and New York's not so far, and DC to anywhere but Boston is not so far. Those are all busable, so you could save a little bit of money, but that's not a big deal. And in the West, there's no bus trips, and none of those flights are, you know, I mean, Seattle to Los Angeles and Seattle to Washington, D.C., once you get to the airport, you pass through, you know, all the waiting and the lines and whatever, even if you're going to do some of those as charter flights, or even if you're going to do all of them as charter flights, like, it's a difference of a couple hours. It's not a big deal.
You're paying for fuel.
The money's not, the price is not going to be significantly different. I just don't understand it, honestly. So I'll ask you if you have a theory on it. My only theory on this is based on something that someone replied to me over Twitter, which is that this is maybe the beginning of the league going in a direction of kind of splitting functionally into kind of two leagues, an MLS West and MLS East that play each other very rarely in order to heighten the drama for the postseason clashes when you get into the playoffs. There's some reason that makes some sense to me, but there's also a reason why that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me because, I don't know, I'm not sure I understand this move, Matt. Do you?
No, I don't understand it either, to be honest. I'd love to know what the thinking behind it was. The thing that even makes less sense for me, Mark, is that there's no consistency because there's an odd number of teams now in MLS with Austin FC joining in it. We have 14 teams in the Eastern Conference and then 13 teams in the Western Conference. Looks like right now they have Nashville playing in the Eastern Conference, as they were always going to inevitably. But, you know, so for example, Mark, the LA Galaxy are only playing two games out of conference. They are at Inter Miami for the opening game of the season, and they are hosting New York Red Bull. And then so their final 32 games of the season will all be in conference play. And even if we look at conference play, there's similarly a regionalization of that. If I look at Sporting Kansas City, four times we'll play Dallas, Austin, the three Texas teams, and then the Colorado Rapids, they'll play each of them, I believe, three or four times. And if I look at it, the Rapids are only playing LAFC two, for example. So there's a regionalization within that, just how there was last year that I don't fully understand. I could understand not being able to have everyone play everyone at least once, that you can't do an even schedule in terms of outer conference play. I don't understand not having a consistent number of games between conference play and out of conference play. And then even within conference play, not having it more balanced to the point where there are some teams who will play each other four times, but then those teams will play other teams only twice as well. Why not make it 3-3? And okay, yes, it's some balance there because then you don't have an even number of home and away games, but you figure you balance that out across all the opponents, that will balance itself out. Just like how, Mark, you know, the Western Conference teams that have to fly east, you know, the Rapids inevitably would have, you know, a Wednesday game at Philly and then a Saturday game at New England. And they would say, oh, that's the toughest week of the schedule. Everybody's going to have to do that. You know, at some point, Orlando has to fly to Cascadia. An LA team has to fly to Toronto. That will balance it out over the course of the schedule, one would think, in theory, based on everybody playing each other. But, you know, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for why it's not a balanced schedule within conference and why there's not even a balanced number of games that you're playing within conference versus out of conference. So I don't have a good answer for that, Mark. And like what you said, I don't know that there is an obvious pandemic-related reason behind this at all.
The other thing I'll say is that the Rapids did not get a single national television game on Fox. I don't know if they're on ESPN, but they have zero games on Fox, to which Richard Terry is not happy.
Yes, I guess the one thing that I will say that they lucked out, Mark, when we think about those conference play, I'm still not sure if FC Cincinnati's going to be good this year. Now, the Rapids, if I'm not mistaken, Mark, will be playing a road game, so I guess the Rapids will be playing at the new FC Cincinnati Stadium, and maybe if that has fans, that'll have a new atmosphere that will lift FCC in the ways that Nippert Stadium did not. But then they're playing Toronto FC, who I'm not sure is going to be very good this year, Mark. In any case, a team that Robin Fraser will be very familiar with from its personnel. Those are two games that I think the Rapids could comfortably get a result. And I guess the only reason why I'm chalking up that New England game as being really, really rough is, again, that's going to be the Wednesday after a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. And that's going to be really tough having to fly across country. And I think, Mark, New England's going to be one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference this year. Last thing we'll say here, Mark, that I touched on, but we'll go back, we'll circle back to it. At FC Dallas, which, as we talked about previously, was a bit of a tough game. Home opener at altitude against an expansion team, Austin FC, who will be playing just their second game ever. That should be chalked up to a very comfortable win. And then their other game will be against Vancouver, an away game, but an away game at altitude in which the Rapids will be an advantage going to, you know, slightly lower ground. Vancouver acclimating for its first time ever for most of those players to playing at altitude. And then also them effectively having to live into a bubble, you know, where Jonathan Lewis is getting to go home every single night. You know, Drew Moore is getting to see the kids every single night during the week. That should be, for me as well, a comfortable victory, Mark. So we figure, let's go to Dallas and try to get a point. Nick, a nil-nil, a 1-1. Take it. Thank you very much. Get a win against Austin. Get a win against Vancouver. That is 7 points in three games. I would have to assume that comfortably puts you as one of the best eight American teams in the Supporters Shield standings after three games. Mark, I would expect, I would consider it a failure for the Colorado Rapids to not qualify for the 2021 iteration of the Open Cup.
Yeah. I'll just add one more thing, which is back to an earlier point, Matt, which is that I think that the draw that we got for our opening three games is really, really good for this new idea of having them be the qualifier for the Open Cup. You know, Vancouver's been terrible for the last couple years. They're probably going to show some strides this year, and maybe they'll come out of the gate with some fire in the belly, but I don't think so. I mean, they're historically been pretty bad lately, bottom of the league. And Austin, I don't think they're going to have their footing right out of the gate either. So, you know, I'm not saying that it's definitely 6 points for the Rapids, but it looks good. It looks promising. If they can get a result against Dallas, then they'll almost certainly qualify with those three games. That being said, the Rapids' historic floundering and terribleness in the Open Cup makes me think that whether they do really well in the opening three games or not is kind of immaterial, because odds are by the time they get to the actual Lamar Hunt, it won't matter anymore.
Yeah, let's, you know, Mark, it would be so hashtag that so Rapids for the Rapids to come out of the gate, win those first three games, be like, yeah, four games, Open Cup, and then for them to lose at New Mexico 1-0. That would be, you know, like the Rapids would get, they're the ones, they are historically, folks, like the team most likely amongst MLS teams to be cup set to be Railhawks. But in any case, Mark, I would consider it, I would have some serious questions, or there'd have to be extenuating circumstances for the Rapids to not have 4 points through three games. I don't know if four is going to be close enough for you to get in the top eight amongst there's 25 teams in MLS this year, I believe. Yeah, 27, excuse me. And then so let's take out the three Canadian teams, so 24. Yeah, you'd have to be in the top third of American-based MLS teams. 4 points might be pushing it, Mark. 5 would probably see you there. 7, if we're talking about draw Dallas, beat Austin, beat Vancouver, would have you there with room to spare. Let's get through a couple news and notes here, Mark. First of all, this past Saturday, the Colorado Rapids played a 90-minute scrimmage against Sporting Kansas City, in which they were victorious by a score of 1-0. Drew Moore with a header goal off of that one, and some good news on the injury front, Mark. As I mentioned last week, the Rapids had a couple of injuries, nothing major, and three of those four players had returned. Both the number one and number two goalkeeper, William Yarbrough, starting in this one, and Clint Irwin coming off the bench, and then Brian Galvan, who also had an injury, came off the bench in this one as well. So the only player who we've seen from that initial injury list, Mark, who is not featured in any of the preseason games, is Juan Diego Rubio. Andre Shinyashiki starting in his stead up top at the number nine position, and then Cole Bassett also starting as well, Mark. So the players who were left off the final list, the final roster for Olympic qualification for the United States back and incorporated into the team. I'll just throw it to you really briefly, Mark. The Rapids have had two 45-minute scrimmages and then the 90-minute scrimmage against Sporting Kansas City. They have won all three of those games, in air quotes, and they've yet to concede a goal. We don't put a whole lot of stock into preseason. You and I believe preseason doesn't matter until it does. I am struggling to come up with major negatives early on in preseason. Rabbi, your thoughts?
I feel like we have this conversation every year, and it's probably I think we're still young enough as a podcast, because this is what, our third season covering the Rapids as a podcast?
We're going into our fourth.
God, we've covered We're Old Men, Matt. We've had a podcast for 4 years. The podcast is ready to consider starting applying to kindergartens. It's a difficult process, Matthew. I've been through it. We really need to consider whether the podcast is ready, whether it's potty trained, you know, all those issues that we need to consider. what was I talking about?
Preseason form, doesn't matter. Should we take it with a four-finger pinch of salt?
Right. That's what I was about to say, that we've talked about this on the podcast, I think, year after year, so I don't know if it's redundant at this point, because we've been doing this for 4 years, but the point is that I don't put much stock, I don't think you do either, in preseason results. They don't really mean much. You know, those early scrimmages were, you know, give each of the guys a 30-minute run out or 60-minute run out. We don't know who the starters really, you know, we don't really know how the starters are going to perform, because Sam Vines hasn't been there at all. They've had Steven Betashore filling in on the left the whole time. You know, a number of other notable players have either been away or absent. The first scrimmage, Abe Rodriguez started in goal for the whole time because both Clint Irwin and William Yarbrough were out with some undisclosed injuries. They were back the next game. So we don't really know a whole lot. I mean, what we know more about this team based on last year than we do from scrimmages. I think the big questions that would be answered, and we'll probably get a sense of at the end scrimmages, which will be televised, has to do with who's going to win those battles to be the center back. And I think the other question of how is the team imagining using both their three midfielders, or who will be the three midfielders for certain, and if the three midfielders don't include Yunus Nnamdi, where will Nnamdi most likely play, since he's popped up on the left and the right? And none of that's been answered up till now.
Well said there, Mark. The Colorado Rapids did announce they've added a couple of extra scrimmages. Their next one, which was already on the docket, will be this coming Saturday against New Mexico United. And then this coming midweek, they'll have another, I would assume, two 45-minute games, because the kickoffs are an hour apart. On the 31st of March, they'll be playing FC Tucson, a League One team, Mark? Question mark? Does that sound right?
Who? Phoenix?
FC Tucson.
Yes, they are.
Yes, League One, FC Tucson, and then Los Dos, LA Galaxy 2 as well. I imagine, given those are two lower division teams, Mark, that we'll see a lot more roster rotation, as we'll get into in a bit. I think some of the initial roster decisions have kind of indicated where, at least an initial depth chart, and thus we can glean a little bit of insight into potential loanees for the Colorado Rapids. Just a few more news and notes, Mark. Leagues Cup. The equivalent, the CONCACAF equivalent of Europa League has decided to reduce the number of teams that they had. They were supposed to have 16 teams, 8 from MLS, 8 from Liga MX last year, the 2020 iteration of the tournament, which was canceled. And for a number of very obvious reasons, fixture congestion, international travel, in the case of the Liga MX teams, Mark, they have decided to revert back to the 2019 iteration of the tournament. So just 4 teams from each of the leagues, and thus the top 2 teams from each conference that did not qualify for CONCACAF Champions League. So that will be the Seattle Sounders and Minnesota United, if I'm not mistaken, from the Western Conference. So no more Leagues Cup for the Colorado Rapids. I'm not crying too many tears from this, folks. This was going to be, you know, another fixture congestion that was only going to complicate things for the Rapids. And the only way it was going to make up for itself was if it led to the Colorado Rapids winning a trophy, which I do not think that they would have against some quality Liga MX opponents. This simplifies things for Robin Fraser very much. Let's look to finish, you know, finish in the playoff spots, you know, get a home playoff game this year, be in Leagues Cup when they go back to the 16-team format, 8 teams from each league, 4 from the Western Conference in 2022. Sam Vines and Jonathan Lewis, Mark, are potentially just one result away from clinching the Olympics for the U.S. men's national team for the first time in a very long time. Lewis came off the bench in the game against Mexico, Mark. Sam Vines did not feature, though he was on the bench, and both players started the first 2 games, wins against Costa Rica and the Dominican Republic. Both of them combining well on the left-sided flank, Mark. Jonathan Lewis creating a lot of chances, and Sam Vines pretty much not putting a single foot wrong when it came to the defensive side of things. The U.S. had yet to concede a goal prior to tonight. They're both playing well, Mark. They're both in really good form. Yes, they're missing time with their Rapids teammates, but I have to assume, assuming that these guys get a result on Sunday, I would expect both of them to start on Sunday. They're going to come back to either Tucson or Colorado flying and ready for the regular season. Yes?
I would assume so. Yeah, that's it. I think, you know, being with the national team has got to be the best preseason training you can get. Although, you know, of course you could make the argument that, you know, getting in with your boys and getting that timing and that chemistry together is worthwhile. But I think right now, and, you know, most of American soccer Twitter and American soccer fandom has its eyes glued on Sam Vines and is thinking like, wow, this guy's really, really good. I mean, he's got to be, Matt, the only domestic USMNT or USYNT player that's getting the same level of buzz as the European guys, the Weston McKinney type guys and the Pulisics. I don't think, Matt's making a face at me, I don't think there's anybody on that team right now that people are as high on.
You said youth national team, right, Mark?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to, like, if I'm just thinking who's the preferred, like, the preferred starting 11 for this group from the 20 men, which one of them seriously have a shot at getting it? I don't think David Ferreira's kid has a chance at making the starting lineup. And while I do think the midfielders have been really good, Jordy Mihailovic was kind of the one bright spot from the starters tonight. I thought Jackson Ewell and Hassani dropping dimes, Dotson, have both been very, very excellent. Based on what I've seen from Dotson, Mark, I can't really argue. Unless Cole Bassett was outperforming him significantly in training, I can't complain with that decision from a midfield standpoint. But even then, you know, both of those are more number eights than they are a true number 10. They're not unseating a Tyler Adams, a Weston McKennie. And now, you know, with Yunus Musa deciding to go with the United States men's national team, between him and Gio Reyna, those are spots that are going to be really, really tough for them to unseat. So I would agree with you in that I think Sam Vines has shown a lot of potential. He's done it at the club level, albeit under the radar for the Colorado Rapids. Now he's doing it on a much larger stage in games that actually matter, and he's playing really, really well. And I would argue at this point, it's between Sam Vines and Anthony Robinson from Fulham in terms of who's really got a decent shot as the number one choice natural left back. I say that natural asterisk because I still think it's an open debate whether or not Greg Berhalter will deploy Sergiño Dest either on the right or on the left. But certainly he's in the conversation. I think Jonathan Lewis, his summer will probably determine whether or not he gets into significant opportunities with the national team come World Cup qualification. I guess the one thing that he kind of has going for him, Mark, is similar to Vines. He's played well, been a little bit under the radar in terms of his club play, but he's done really good things for the national team. If we go back to the friendly that they had at the end of January camp, and Jordan Morris probably isn't getting involved in the early fall in the late fall, early winter games that you have there for World Cup qualification. And given all of the buzz that's going on around in terms of what the heck's going on with Christian Pulisic and Thomas Tuchel, Mark, you know, Pulisic pulls up with a hamstring issue and Jonathan Lewis would be really, really good, you know, Christian Pulisic hamstring insurance as far as I'm concerned. So I think Lewis is in the conversation, but realistically we look at Vines and you think, who's his competition? It's one guy, albeit a guy who's playing very well, who's also very young, you know, playing in the Premier League. I don't know that there's any other guy that I look at in this group who's, you know, in there. You know, I would say, you know, okay, if Weston McKennie's suspended and if Tyler Adams isn't released by RB Leipzig and Michael Bradley can't go 90 minutes, would I be okay with Jackson Ewell playing, you know, 15 minutes off the bench at home in a World Cup qualifier against Honduras? Yeah, I would be perfectly comfortable right now having Sam Vines or Jonathan Lewis start in a home World Cup qualifier against Honduras. Let's move on. Oh, Mark, last thing that we'll say, predictions. I know we don't know the opponent yet. Does the U.S. qualify for the Olympics on Sunday? Yes or no?
I think so. It's looking like a good thing, which is really, really great. I think the one thing that I'll never get over is they're still calling it the 2020 Summer Olympics. That's driving me crazy, Matt. Really bugs me.
I'll say yes, they'll make it as well. So first of all, Mark, congratulations to Tejon Buchanan and Canada for eliminating the United States on this Sunday. Let's move on, Mark. We've got one more big news dump. Colorado Rapids, Mark, they traded one of their 2021 international slots to Atlanta United earlier this week in exchange for 225,000 Garber Bucks GAM. But that is 2022 GAM, folks. So the Rapids, Porrick Smith won't be getting to add that money to the let's buy a distressed asset from another MLS team this year. But that certainly would apply if they were going to do that. Or, I don't know, Mark, move up to get another top five guy who nobody rates who could compete for Rookie of the Year in the Super Draft this coming January. The Rapids also sent an international roster slot to FC Dallas for Michael Barrios, Mark. So I have it on my international roster slot PIDS math that they have six of those for eight players who counted as internationals for the 2020 MLS season. Mark, which, let's do Colorado Rapids players likely to get a green card bingo.
Okay, well, the top choices, in my humble opinion, are Andre Shinyashiki, because he has been in the United States for a very long time. He came to DU as a freshman, and that means that he played 4 years at DU, plus his first 2 years in MLS, giving him 6 years in the United States. This is the beginning of his third year. So I think if we're going on time, Shinyashiki is really likely. Now, I put this in a tweet. I think it's worth noting that time is not the only determinant when it comes to green cards. Sometimes it's just the luck of the draw, and sometimes your marital status has an impact on this. So if your spouse comes to the United States and earns a green card, then often you can earn a green card. I think that's the reason why Stefan Aigner, when he played for the Rapids in 2017, was able to earn a green card in something like 6 months. But I'm not exactly sure. And, you know, to be honest, I don't think anybody who isn't, you know, a full-time immigration lawyer could really tell us this. I guess the other player that I think might be most likely to earn this would be Jack Price, because he's, again, been here a long time. The only thing is, you know, the Rapids front office is really pushy at trying to get players who plan on being here for a while to invest the time and energy to get it. I'm sure they smooth it over for them. But the question kind of there is, you know, does this kind of imply that he's very likely to stick around in MLS, you know, at the end of his contract, or do they feel like, you know, he's sticking around in the United States afterwards? Because, you know, I mean, it's a slight investment. Matt, do you agree, or is there someone here you think is a more likely candidate, a less likely candidate?
I would agree. I think the one that I'm kind of also curious about, for the same reasons as Jack Price, Mark, is one Danny Wilson. Both of them became fathers while members of the Colorado Rapids. I know for a fact that Jack and his significant other had their baby in the off season, so they were back in England pre-pandemic. Danny Wilson, I believe, became a father in his first year with the Colorado Rapids. I don't know if the child was born, you know, back somewhere in the UK, probably in Scotland. So I would have to wonder, Mark, does giving birth to an American citizen potentially benefit him in ways that you would have there that Jack Price wouldn't, obviously, you know, as his entire family being three UK passport holders. But I think those three are the most likely, Mark. And I would assume Porik's not making this move and setting a new record, I believe, for the value of a full season international roster spot without a pretty good understanding that they're going to be compliant. You know, he's not gonna, you know, because if he sells that and it's like, oh, we need an international roster spot from a team that's deferred, it's, oh, well, you just gave up 225K and now you really, really need it. You know, it's 250K. And then so the Rapids end up, you know, losing 25 yam. You know, for effectively, you know, trading away to get the exact same asset. So I would have to assume this move is being made with the understanding that the Rapids will be made whole from that roster compliance standpoint, having at least two players get a green card. And Mark, like, if we're talking about, you know, what international roster spots are worth, you know, getting 225K from a team that's pretty desperate for it, you know, that 225K is going to go a pretty long way for the Colorado Rapids, Mark, which again, we should point out, the Rapids once upon a time acquired a permanent roster spot from Real Salt Lake more. And I have to wonder, Mark, just based on the high water mark every single year, that has to be worth well over $1 million in GAM at this point.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if they're selling another one, right? Or are you talking about...
I'm just talking about, like, what that trade, like, trading for, like, what a, you know, a permanent roster spot being sold in 2009, what that would be worth now in terms of if the Rapids had to go out and acquire every year at the max value an extra international roster spot. Bearing in mind, of course, folks, that it will be through almost the end of this current new decade that RSL has one for Sayana Niasse. Do I have that right, Mark? I can't remember those trades, but I look forward to us doing a special episode on that when that finally becomes whole, and then the Rapids will be able to cash in on that proverbially in terms of the assets. Anything else that we want to say about this trade, Mark, or shall we get on to the final big item of the evening?
The money's really interesting to the point that I'm fumbling for words here. I don't know if they're going to spend it, right? Like, I don't know, you know, a GAM is really useful because it can pay you down to get you under a threshold for a salary cap, but it's not like actual money in the sense that, like, it's not like big briefcases arrive at the airport from Don Garber's, you know, personal safe and they, you know, they use it to pay players. So, you have to use it. Matt, it has to be used on players who would otherwise be in that what used to be kind of TAM range player. You know, a guy who he hits the roster at, I think what probably this year will be over $650,000, to get them under. So that means that the Rapids, it only matters if you sell these international slots, if you're buying more of those mid-range price players. You know, it's, considering they don't utilize one of the DP slots, whether they're utilizing a DP or utilizing some of that extra GAM they have, you know, as long as they're well under the total threshold of DP slots, GAM TAM, and roster cap, you know, it's if you spend it, right? It's if you spend it. And I'm a little concerned that the Rapids haven't had a history of spending it, so...
Okay, in any case, Mark, let's move on. We got news earlier today, Mark, that the Colorado Rapids made their first of what I assume will be many loan deals for the 2021 season. Backup right back Jeremy Kelly in his second year with the Rapids, and then Andre Rawls will both be sent to Phoenix Rising FC. I have to wonder, Mark, Jeremy Kelly played in that 45-minute scrimmage the Rapids had against Phoenix, and they've got a few more USL opponents. If we think about New Mexico, Tucson, I don't know if they'd make a move with LA Galaxy 2, given the connection with the Galaxy there, where potentially the Rapids could be shopping, you know, Jeremy Kelly played really, really well against Phoenix Rising. We could use a reliable option with some good talent at right back. Let's go for him. And so maybe the Rapids could be playing an Ollie LaRaz, a Darren Yappe, someone else against those weaker opponents, having them perform well against those opponents, and then try to shop them. Just a thought here. But in any case, Mark, Jeremy Kelly and Andre Rawls will be moving to Phoenix. Jeremy Kelly played in 8 games for the Rapids last year, had 2 starts. Both of those starts were in cases where Keegan Rosenberry was not available due to COVID. I believe both of them occurred in the MLS's back tournament. 246 minutes, he did have an assist. Andre Rawls, Mark, going into his 6th year in Major League Soccer, he had 3 with New York City FC, is set up to be in his 3rd season with the Colorado Rapids, has yet to make his MLS debut. Both are domestic players, Mark. I guess the 2 thoughts that I have here, Mark, is there's a pretty decent group of third choice goalkeepers in Major League Soccer that basically just sign a 2 to 4 year deal every couple of years. They sign it knowing they're going to be the third choice goalkeeper, and basically they just say, okay, I'm going to come in and I'm going to work really hard in training when the other 2, the starters and the backup, aren't able to play. I'm going to stay late in training so that the strikers can work on their finishing, maybe do some PK drills that would take a lot out of you in terms of weight on your hips, and that's going to get me my 70K, and I'm not going to have to worry about the stresses about getting caught if I commit an own goal or, you know, don't save a penalty in a critical game or anything. And so the Rapids and a lot of other MLS teams kind of rotate through these players at this point. Andre Rawls, you know, is 29 years old. Now, I think his ceiling at this point is probably functional backup goalkeeper for the Colorado Rapids. Rawlsy unlikely to start as long as one of Clint Irwin and Yarbrough are available for selection and healthy. Maybe it's more functional for the Colorado Rapids to have Abe Rodriguez not playing regularly, but working every single day in training, staying back extra with Chris Sharpie, who was his academy goalkeeper coach, who rates him very, very highly, working with him regularly, and then Abe Rod getting extra development from that, even though he's not playing, just by the fact that he's in Commerce City going to DSG every single day for training rather than out with the Springs or somewhere else, and that's more productive for his long-term development than having a guy who, yes, will put in that same work to help out his other teammates, but has no real chance of playing regularly for the first team. And in that, Rawls gets to actually play regularly. Maybe the Rapids could then later shop him to a USL team if he proves to be a functional goalkeeper in USL. And the Rapids could have a full year of getting to evaluate Abe Rodriguez rather than having him be out in the Springs, as opposed to being, you know, a sometimes starter, sometimes backup with the Colorado Springs switchbacks. What I think is really interesting here, Mark, is in terms of, yes, Keegan Rosenberry is an Iron Man, but as we talked about, there's going to be fixture congestion. I'm going to assume that Keegan Rosenberry is not going to be playing the 450 minutes in those 5 games over 16 days in October. Jeremy Kelly, you know, is probably, in terms of his long-term development, he needs minutes at his age. Could he go to Phoenix and get easily 2,000 minutes, probably start many, if not most, of their games, and then have a player serve as the backup right back and have that be a player who is Sebastian Anderson, who's similar to Abe Rodriguez, just needs time to train with the first team, bit part starting, just to really give Keegan Rosenberry a break. And in that, it's more productive for both players, for Kelly to play regularly, work on his little kinks, actually have more playing time rather than training and learning from Keegan Rosenberry, where Sebastian Anderson, who, you know, Mark, he's never really been a regular starter at this point. He wasn't a regular starter when he was down with the switchbacks. If he's not going to play at least 750 minutes this year, at least have him training with first team players to the point where he can get progress in there, similar to Abe Rodriguez taking penalty shots, free kicks, headers from a Diego Rubio or an Andre Shinyashiki, as opposed to whoever the striker for the switchbacks is, who will have no chance likely of ever starting for the Colorado Rapids. Mark, those are my 2 theories. Your thoughts on these 2 moves?
I was surprised by the Jeremy Kelly move. I'll read it differently than you. You read it as, well, Rosenberry's going to play so much, and it's just he's not going to get minutes. So I'll read it slightly differently than that, but probably what you were kind of also implying by it, which is what's best for Kelly's development is to play, you know, and he's not going to play with Colorado. It's less that you don't need a backup to Rosenberry and you might want that roster space. It might just be that Jeremy Kelly's best career move would be to spend time at Phoenix. I think the interesting question, because Phoenix is the most stacked team in the USL Championship is whether he's the clear-cut right-back choice for them. They're a really talented team, full of extremely good players. I interviewed a USL assistant coach this week, and he was talking about roster construction and how he goes about it. And he was pointing out that his team just can't throw money at the better players or the kind of fringy MLS guys like Phoenix Rising can.
Like Louisville, so Phoenix Rising, Mark, would be in that top tier of them, Sacramento, Louisville, etc.
I would put them above everybody else. I would actually
really
put them. Yeah, I think.
Why? What's the difference with Phoenix?
Louisville's MO has historically been to just re-sign players. They want to keep guys. And Indy has also been like that. Indy 11 has also been, has signed very talented players and hung on to them. But, Phoenix, you know, was capable 2 years ago of having one of the best strikers in the league and one of the best midfielders in the league, guys who were like fringy MLS possibilities, Solomon Asante and Junior Flemings. And I was like, oh, these guys are fantastic. They, you know, they've proven themselves. They scored a ton of goals and a ton of assists. They're definitely going to move on to a bigger league, even if that bigger league is, you know, a second division team in Europe or something like that. Nope, Phoenix re-signed him. Phoenix paid the money to keep them. You know, you don't really see that because by comparison, Tyler Pasher, who played with Indy, just went to MLS this year. I think he's with Nashville this year. So, you know, like that's the difference is that Phoenix is actually spending low-end MLS money on players. I don't think anybody else in the USL is.
Phoenix on, so let me make sure I'm understanding this right, Mark, because I think this is instructive, because I think the last time Rapids fans were thinking about Phoenix Rising was when Mike DeFont went there from the Rapids. So Phoenix Rising is, they have, so where Louisville, I feel like, Mark, has been a team that just signs veteran USL guys and just has that group, you know, that are just, they're never going to make it to MLS. That phone call is never going to happen. And Phoenix has been open to signing guys who will eventually move on, but they are picking up players who then have had potentially options, lower division options in Europe, have had options in MLS, and then they, both from a culture, from a chance to win standpoint, and from a money standpoint, there are players who are turning down other opportunities to go to or re-sign with Phoenix. Whereas the guys who won back-to-back USL championships with Louisville, like, the best thing that they're going to get is the league minimum and then a 1 year with a team option that they're probably going to get cut, and they're not going to play at all for the MLS team.
I mean, your question is a critique, and I think it's a legitimate one. Because USL contracts are completely opaque, we'll never know the answer to that question. So the players that Matt's talking about with Louisville, they may have, to Matt's point, been re-signed because they know that it's not going to get any better at another league team. That they feel like, you know, $65,000 for the year is the best they can do. But it might also be like what I said, which is that Phoenix players are really getting, you know, decent sized contracts, you know, real almost MLS level money. And so they're hanging on to them for that.
Mark, would you say in that this is a healthy environment for Jeremy Kelly to grow? And if Andre Rawls was going to be anywhere, that at least this is a place. Okay, yes or no. Is this a healthy environment? Are you excited to see what this could mean in terms of both of these players growing and then being in a better position to help the Rapids win in 2022?
For Jeremy Kelly, it's the best option. I mean, I think Jeremy Kelly will almost certainly get time there, even if he's not the best fullback on the roster. He'll get a lot of opportunity to play for sure. I'm less certain about what it means for Andre Rawls. Although they're not real deep at goalkeeper. They have two other players at goalkeeper, Landon Carter, who I don't know much about, and Zach Lubin. Zach Lubin does have a really nice background. He's the presumptive starter for them. 47 starts between 2018 and now. And he even did a brief loan stint with the Seattle Sounders. So, he's a legit you know, first or second tier goalkeeper, who is 31 years old and likely to be, you know, helpful as a mentor to Rawls. The other guy's name didn't ring a bell in any way, shape, or form. So maybe Rawls slots right in there as the number two, which would be fairly valuable. But that being said, USL doesn't even start till June, Matt, and they're likely to play a, sorry, some teams are playing in May. Some games are happening in May. The official beginning start time was announced as like mid-April, but most of the team's first games, they gave the teams wide latitude as to when to start, and most of the teams pushed their start dates back as far as they could. So I think the Riverhounds' first game is going to be May 15th, and their season opener at home is June 6th. And the reason that those dates are so late is because they wanted to wait until more and more and more people are vaccinated, which makes it more and more and more likely that they get people turning revenue at the gate, because USL wasn't making any money on television, whereas MLS is making at least some money on television.
Mark, yes or no, we're going to assume again Keegan Rosenberry is the starting right back and will play the overwhelming majority of games for the Colorado Rapids. Will Sebastian Anderson be the player with the second most minutes at right back for the Colorado Rapids this year?
Ooh, wow, that is such an interesting question. No, I think Sebastian gets loaned out. I don't think he plays a minute, but that's wildly speculative. What do you think, Matt?
You know, if that happens, Mark, I think do we see a reprise of Courtney Ford, conservative right back that we saw in 2019? I think is a really interesting question. One question that we got cut, folks, that we will get to, is the Rapids have six center backs. I think it's unlikely that more than four of them will get a regular run out, and it's unless Drew Moore is extremely hurt, at which point, you know, that's probably an indication that this will be his final year playing professionally. Those fifth and sixth spots on the depth chart are probably going to be two of the three young players, Austin Trusty, Courtney Ford, who's now back from injury, and then Michael Edwards, who we spoke to on the last podcast. And so I wonder, you know, is that fifth guy happy only getting 400 minutes, bit part playing? And is that sixth guy even getting minutes? And so I have to wonder, Mark, that was something that Courtney Ford was okay with in 2019. This podcast recounted the many failings of players at the right back position. You know, could we see the Colorado Rapids go to three at the back? We saw Keegan Rosenberry at times be one of those right center backs when they've gone to three at the back. And then do the Rapids then just commit in terms of a going forward standpoint? You know, does Sam Vines become what Alexander Arnold, Benjamin Mendy have been from a formation and a tactic standpoint, Mark, for Liverpool or Manchester City, where the fullback bombs forward and then in possession the Rapids go to three at the back, to the point where having Keegan Rosenberry's backup be more of a conservative outside back? And then when Sam Vines is gone, you have Steven Betashore or potentially one of the other center backs there, and then Keegan Rosenberry bombs forward to the point where they're cockeyed in terms of which side in order to create an overload with the wing, or have Jack Price drop back to help from defensive numbers. I think that is an interesting question in terms of tactical wrinkles that we could see from Robin Fraser, that I think would be another option that they have now that a traditional MLS tested center right back isn't on the depth chart anymore, with Jeremy Kelly gone and Sebastian Anderson still very raw and younger, and also coming off of that MCL injury that he sustained back in the summer, Mark. And would that be an option that Court Ford or one of the other center backs would be able to choose in and then give them more flexibility if Ford's okay with going to the midway line, lumping balls in, and then also shifting to a back three, given all of the wide options that they have, which I think brings another question, Mark, that we won't get to tonight because we're running out of time, and I'm not actually going to ask it, but like, do we eventually see like Jonathan Lewis, Ryan Galvan, right wing back? I think would be an interesting, you know, let's get to that. I'm acting like a tactics nerd right now, Mark, who has way too much time and is coming up with like Rapids, like, fan fiction tactical ideas, you know, that would be of the same ilk as, you know, those are in the same category as like Kellen Acosta center forward, which, you know, we won't spend any time on.
I'll just answer really simply and quickly without us, but because I think this is a good question about like, what does the roster allow you to do, especially considering It all plays in nicely together, which is, you know, the point that you made about the unbelievable amount of matches they're going to have to play at the end of October and the need to be able to rotate some of your players. The thing that I was just going to remark is that I'm not sure Robin Fraser is the kind of guy who feels like he should change his formation to suit the guys on the roster. So even if Jonathan Lewis would make a fantastic wingback, and even if that would solve some depth problems the Rapids might have, I don't know that Robin Fraser feels really strongly about that. I feel like the closest we'll get to Robin Fraser being tactically willing to tinker will be switching from a 4-3-3 to something that plays a lot like a 4-3-3, like a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-4-2 diamond, which, you know, like they, depending on where you push guys and where you slot them and how far you let a guy run forward, you could make the argument that any one of those three formations might ultimately wind up looking exactly like the other one. So
last thing I'll say, Mark, and then we'll get out of here. Feedspot.com, which is a blog which looks at podcasts, particularly in the sports category, Mark, came out with their top podcast by MLS team this season, and guess who was ranked number one for the top five Colorado Rapids podcasts in 2021, Mark?
Wait, there are five podcasts on the Colorado Rapids?
So the fifth one that they have, they only have four, and the fourth one is just generic Altitude Sports Radio.
Right, of course.
Okay, Mark, we're number one. They rated us number one, and they looked at, like, number of followers on Twitter. They ranked at domain authenticity, like Alexa rankings, and then how often you put out a podcast, and then, like, the quality of that, and then the number of social media that they have off of that, as well as the number of listens that they actually have, Mark. And somebody there at FeedSpot looked all at that, did all of their data analysis, took out their own personal biases, and just said, what is the data and the conclusions drawing from me, Mark? And they rated us ahead of the Colorado Rapids podcast. So here we are, Mark. Like, you like to say, I don't know if we've ever said this on the podcast, but Mark, you point to the staying power of both of us as writers and this podcast of just, we're cockroaches and we don't go away. And we have lived and seen new websites and, like, new people come up and be like, hey, I want to write about the Colorado Rapids. And then, like, they join, they create their new website, and they fizz out after 2 years. And you and I are here, and no matter what goes on with this team, we're still going to be here podcasting about it. And so I guess that makes us the last man standing and the default answer you have to come up with in terms of ranking top Rapids podcasts in the year 2021.
Fantastic. That is such good news. We're a big deal, man. We're a serious thing. We should celebrate with champagne, or at least four cups of wine, which I will do on Saturday night in celebration of the holiday of Passover.
Yeah, so if you want to do that, if you want to check that out, folks, go on over to blog.feedspot.com. They have, obviously, our rankings at Colorado_Rapids_podcast/, and they also have a bunch of other ones. So they're a really decent, other than that article, Mark, that MLSsoccer.com drops every single year of the active team-specific podcast. They're a really good option if you're thinking, you know, oh, the Colorado Rapids are playing SC Dallas in the opening week of the season. So it's April 10th. So I'm going to look at and find a really good FC Dallas podcast to look at that's going to preview that. FeedSpot is one of the good resources that you have for finding the top five FC Dallas podcasts you must listen to in 2021. Mark, tell our listeners about our sponsors. Let's get out of here.
FC Icarus. Icarus FC is a wonderful place to go and buy your kit. We're excited. They just signed their first professional deal domestically with New Amsterdam, a wonderful club that operates out of New York City in the NISA League on the official professional soccer pyramid in the United States. If you want to dress like the pros, if you want your youth team or your men's rec team or your indoor team or your futsal team to look like the pros, consider looking at the amazing templates that you can find on Icarus FC. For kits, they have all the colors, they have all the styles, and they make it look really good. And Roughneck Scarves, which is a wonderful supporter of the Beautiful Game Network, a great place to dress up your neck and keep yourself warm. We're moving into, well, the spring season where things kind of weather-wise can be a little bit dicey. You want to have that warm scarf, but you also may want to have that kind of lightweight one that is an option too. And Roughneck Scarves has the thick, heavy wool ones, and they have all kinds of other materials that you can use for a scarf. And they also make masks. And COVID's not over, baby. So you should probably have a mask. So Icarus FC, Roughneck Scarves, the sponsors of the Beautiful Game Network, and yours truly and Matt's own podcast. Matt, where can you hit us up on the socials?
Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi and at @LWSMattPollard. Subscribe to our newsletter at substack.holdingthehighline.com. Mark, when's Backpass dropping this week?
I've been doing it on Thursdays, when I can, but if anything interesting happens on Tuesday, I'll try and do it then. So you'll see tomorrow. If by the time you listen to this podcast, it probably will already be up.
Excellent stuff there, folks. Follow us on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL or get in touch with us in long form at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe, unsubscribe wherever you get your podcast. Just search Holding the High Line or Colorado Rapids and you'll find us. If we are not on a podcatcher of your preference, please let us know via Twitter, and we'll do our best to get on there and be convenient for you. If we bring further monetary value to your life, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast, or denverpost.com/HTHL for a very good deal on the digital sports content there at the Post. Listeners, we'll hopefully see you next week. I've got a few more interviews to work in, and obviously there's other preseason games, so it looks like if not next week, then certainly by the week after, Mark and I will be reverting back to our in-season form of one podcast a week, so we look forward to seeing you sooner rather than later.